All right. Anyway, we have what to do today, and you're going to see something fascinating. First of all, today is December 1st, 2014. Am I right? Wow. That's Monday morning. We say hello to the students in front, and Yomo included, number one. What are you busy? You're learning Daf Yomi? What were you looking at? Yesterday, when I quoted Reb Menashe Katan, when I quoted the Mishnah Halacha at the end, did I give the source, or I just took for granted the... I am afraid I didn't give the source of the last shiur I quoted. All right, next week I'll mention the exact source. And I want to say hello to all those listening over the world. Now, one interesting correction, not exactly correction, I was misled, but Gabriel Slamovitz, if I'm pronouncing it right, a medical student in New York, etc. I thank you for your kind words, Gabriel. And if you recall, I told a very moving story that I picked up from Vic Geller, that Dr. Belkin was in the elevator in YU, and he says to this kid, "Who am I?" And the kid says, "I don't know, but you look familiar," and Dr. Belkin turned away and cried. So in the footnote, Vic Geller says, "Steve Riskin, told to me by Steve Riskin." So I took for granted that it happened to Steve Riskin. Anyway, Gavriel actually approached Rabbi Riskin when he was in New York recently, and it did not happen. Riskin was a witness to this happening in the elevator. In other words, it evidently happened in the mid-60s when Steve was already teaching the Jewish Studies program, which we'll come to later today. And Dr. Belkin knew Steve Riskin, no two ways about it. But Riskin was a witness to Dr. Belkin saying to a kid in the elevator, but it's not Rabbi Riskin. Now, the footnote, if you're writing a doctorate, this was not a doctorate, so I can't correct the footnote. But if you're writing a scholarly work, you would have to cite this footnote related by Rabbi Riskin, who was a witness to this incident in the elevator. But I just want to correct myself because I was misled, and it was not Rabbi Riskin. And not that it's earth-shaking importance, but it's interesting. Now, we spoke last week about what may ultimately wind up being the ultimate achievement of Rabbi Belkin, Gris Kollel, the building here, the campus here, the future of the campus, what yet can be built on the campus, and all this remains to be seen. But the story is a fascinating story, and considering I'm a little kid from the Bronx, it is Minishamayim Zikuni that I said the right words to Mr. Joe Gris. And we became quite friendly, and as I said, he would come back every year, walk through the building, I would have to have lunch with him, be it was a proper lunch already, not exactly what the Yomo's eating for brunch now. And Mr. Gris would interfere as anything that had to be fixed was fixed. And he was a little disappointed because he viewed what would happen here as a Princeton, as I said last weekend. He felt that BMT was not on that level. But you see, ultimately, the Kollel did achieve a certain niche. What you have here, the Shayurim that he given, I don't think you can get any other place in the world. As far as the outlook of the faculty, I don't think you have another place like Gris Kollel, which is multilithic, as the greatest example I give is the demonstration against the Tzva Haganah Yisrael. Rabbi Miller attended, Rakefet taught class as usual that day, although I did quote a few Rambams before class. Rabbi Betash ran back to be sure he wouldn't be locked into Jerusalem. He ran home. But the Paskvila he published against the Haredim was second to none. And this is fascinating. When I told the story to one of the great Rosh Yeshiva of YU, he reacted right away. "How could Rabbi Miller attend?" I said, "This is Gris Kollel. Live and let live." All right. Now today's shiur is very fascinating. Let me go a step further. With all that Dr. Belkin did, of course, his first love, his basic love, was the yeshiva, Ritz, as you call it. And here, Rabbi Belkin did whatever he could to enhance the faculty. And let me call Zvi Kala, and I'm in no position to know whether this is true or not, because I was a kid. You know, you can't, I remember, I've often told you when I, with the, one of the greatest lessons I've ever had in my life was the lesson from Professor Finkelstein when I set up an appointment to meet with him and speak with him. And I was doing my research for my doctorate, and I uncovered this attempt to merge the yeshiva and the seminary, which I continued to do postdoctoral research, one of the most important pieces I published. And that piece was robbed from me. Someone, I published it in a Favofina journal, Michael, Tel Aviv U, in the 70s, I think it was. I republished it, obviously, in Rakafat Aron. And someone republished it, mamish, word by word by word. I couldn't get over it, but that's life. I just laugh it off. You follow me, Avram? Yeah, I can't take being, if your scholarship is robbed, it's robbed. But still, I can show you two books, my book, and 15 years later, word by word. But so I'm doing research, and I come to see Dr. Finkelstein, and I shoot all, and here I am, a little kid from the Bronx again, facing the chancellor of JTS, the lady who took me into his office, his girl Friday. Later I taught her daughter. And he says to me, Rabbi Rothkopf, you're going to know more about this topic than I ever will. I'm going to learn about this topic from you. He says, when this was happening, I was in short pants. No one took me into the consultations. I was a kid yet. You're researching what happened when I was a youngster. Today I'm the chancellor. Today I know what's going on in JPS. And boy, that was a good lesson. So I cannot tell you whether Vic Geller is right or wrong, but let me quote from Vic. This is page 160, Orthodoxy Awakens. Belkin had little regard for Reitz as an institution of higher Jewish learning. With the exception of Rav Soloveitchik, Rav Moshe Shatskis, Rav Moshe Palev, he was dismissive of the Reitz faculty. Very interesting. What do you mean, dismissive of the Reitz faculty? Little regard, dismissive. These are very, very strong words. But you have to understand, Dr. Belkin came from Europe. He learned with the Chafetz Chaim. He learned in Rabbi. He learned with Reb Menachem Mendel Zaks. Reb Menachem Mendel Zaks was Bucky. Was Bucky. One second. I think I confused. That's Jason Allen, right?
That's correct.
Jason Allen. Okay, now I got it straight. And that's Avram Lida. Okay? Baruch Hashem. I see them once a week. I've got four guys are running around with, five guys have beards. Each one has a trim beard. It's the, if you have a beard, have a real beard. When you trim them, it's impossible for the Rebbe because everyone can trim it to the same size. When the beard is real, then you can tell. Alex has one beard wherever he is. I teach ghosts. No wonder the Rebbe spoke about ghosts. Back here. So Dr. Belkin, you know, saw Gedol Yisrael. He probably saw, Dr. Belkin probably saw Rav Shimon Shkop. So he was very dismissive of the faculty. Rav, of course, was the Rav. Rav Moshe Shatskis, what can I tell you? He was Lamsha Rav. This you don't become Lamsha Rav being a lightweight. As we spoke about Rav Palev yesterday, Rav Moshe Aaron Palev. Was a very special individual, a tremendous Talmud Chacham, and just a sweetheart of the human being. And Vic Geller tells the story in parentheses, a special affection for Rav Palev, a gentle man who really spoke above a whisper. You'll hear it in yesterday's class, I spoke about him, was demonstrated when Rav Palev came to invite Belkin to his son's forthcoming marriage. That's the son we spoke about yesterday in class. In addition to attending, Belkin gave Palev a check to help pay for the wedding. Commenting once on the title of Rosh Yeshiva, Rabbi Belkin said, I can shake any building in Washington Heights and two or three Rosh Yeshiva will fall out. And this is a comment, pro-con. Believe it or not, I don't need Vic Geller to tell me that comment. I heard that exact comment from Rabbi Belkin. I'll tell you when, but not yet. So I know that Dr. Buckland thought this, Arash Yeshiva HaMelamed, you know, they're a dime a dozen. But Gedolei Yisrael are few and far between. Now, here's a story that you won't believe, and I don't need Zvigelder to tell me the story, because his source is Rabbi Dr. Ephraim Shach, and I also knew Rabbi Dr. Ephraim Shach very well. Rabbi Rubin knew him very well, Zichrono Levracha. This was Rabbi Menachem Mann, Rosh Yeshiva Ponovich, his only son. And Rabbi Belkin was so anxious to enhance the yeshiva faculty that he dreamt of inviting Rav Shach to New York. And how did he do it? And this is the story. It's all from Effie. Vic Geller knew about it, but the details he got from Effie. I confirmed it with Effie. I also had a vague memory of this happening. And the story is very simple. In the early 60s, mid-60s, people didn't visit Israel today. Like today, I even say it's a factor in halacha of Yontif Sheni, that when a Chutz Laretz person comes to Israel, he has to observe only one day Mikah. Then if he wants to be a tzaddik, he can not do malacha the second day. Like Erev, Baal Nefesh, Yachmir. But on part of it, besides all the lundas, which obviously is not for now, but Bizman Hazer, everyone goes back and forth. We all are, any Orthodox Jew who's a Ben Torah, not talking now if you're not a Ben Torah, but if you're a Ben Torah, you're a citizen of two countries, America, Canada, South, wherever you live, and Israel. We go back and forth. So that's today, before 67, to go to Israel. Wow, what a big trip. You gave a kiddush when you left, you gave a kiddush when you came back. You spoke about Israel in every shul. It was very different. So Rav Shmuel Belkin got wind of the fact that the most prominent faculty member of Bernard Revel Graduate School was going to Israel that summer. We're talking about Professor Avraham Weiss. We've spoken about him many times over the years. Professor Weiss was Professor Hanach Albeck's brother-in-law. They were brothers-in-law. And both of them knew Shas backwards and forwards. Professor Weiss, Professor Albeck, cannot be dismissed easily. He came out with the Mishnayot. Even in the yeshiva world, if they had a difficult question, they turned to Professor Albeck. Professor Weiss, in YU, all the Rashi Yeshiva knew, even though he had a totally different approach, and he was involved in scientific Jewish scholarship, and he was involved in Chachmat Yisrael, but everyone knew he was a Gon Adia. So Dr. Belkin called in Professor Weiss, and he said to him, I heard you're going to Eretz Yisrael. I can assure you they spoke Yiddish to each other, their native language. Professor Weiss, by the way, was on the Judenrat in Warsaw, before they got him out at the last minute. He had the story of his escape. His wife wrote a memoir, which should be published in English and disseminated, how they escaped and finally got to Spain and were finally able to get... It was miracle on top of miracles. By the way, all their children and grandchildren and great-grandchildren, and they are many, all live al Admat HaKodesh. So Professor Weiss and Mrs. Weiss must have been doing something right. So Dr. Belkin calls in Professor Weiss and says to him, Mechab Gehet, as you fought the Zoom in Eretz Yisrael, that this summer you're going to Israel, do me a favor, go to see the Panovich of Rosh Yeshiva and tell him I am inviting him, along with Rav Soloveitchik, to come to New York for a year and teach at Yeshiva Zuchochanan. So Professor Weiss thinks, he says, how will I get to the Panovich of Rosh Yeshiva? I'm in Chachmat Yisrael. Rav Shach was not exactly the most open-minded individual. Okay, Jason? Who went to Bernard Revel Graduate School? Who sat with Rothkopf in the same classes? Rothkopf got his doctorate in 67, I believe, January 67. He got his doctorate, if I'm not mistaken, January 68, 1 year later. Effie Shach, who is Effie Shach? Rav Shach's only son. So Professor Weiss comes to Israel, and Effie tells his father that this professor wants to see him, Chanuch Albeck's brother-in-law, and Rav Shach was makabel him, and they had a very nice meeting, but Rav Shach said he's not prepared to leave Israel. But this shows you how far Dr. Belkin was willing to go to get faculty, to gain people, to bring over the creme de la creme, the icing on the cake, the best of the best. It also shows you the Rav. By the way, that the Rav, there was no jealousy here. The Rav, they absolutely loved every Talmud Chacham. Bring Rav Shach to the yeshiva, 100%. What's interesting is that Rabbi Belkin was ahead of his time. Rabbi Lamb already, when everyone is coming back from Israel and all the kids are going, and Yeshiva has survived the terrible challenge after Rabbi Belkin's death. They almost lost the whole campus. They almost went totally bankrupt. So Dr. Lamb came up with the idea, bringing an Israeli figure to the yeshiva for 1 or 2 years. He brought Reb Lazar Shapiro. He was Reb Avram Shapiro's nephew. I knew him very well. He lived up the block from me. A going idea. We used to talk and learning, and he had a twinkle in his eyes. He was a chevreman. He supported Rabbi Gorin on the Langer case with the brother and sister, the Mamzevit issue. He's one of the 9 Dayanim who supported Rabbi Gorin. And I remember I briefed him before he went to New York and the yeshiva, and he went and he was quite matzliach. But you got to come back to Israel. What can I tell you? I was offered a big position this past summer. 1 year, terrific salary. So I told them, gentlemen, I thanked them very much. You have to be humble and thankful. But I told them at the end of 30 days, when I'm out of Israel, I forget all my Torah. All I remember are Joe DiMaggio's statistics. You don't want someone who can only talk about DiMaggio, Ruth, Garrick. Oh, those were the good days. What I suffer, what baseball degenerated into. Oh, unbelievable. But coming back here, after Rabbi Shapiro, who did Dr. Lamb bring to America? Yeah, Rabbi Goldrich, Meir Goldrich. And I was with him. He's still mad at me for what I said in public. I was with him his first few days in America. We went to a wedding together. It was a Talmud in the Kollel, who was his Talmud, my Talmud. American story, divorced. Now he came in Aliyah, remarried, thank God. Also married a Talmud of mine from Beit Shemesh. Lives in Beit Shemesh, I believe. We were at the wedding, and Martin Dekar, who picked us up, the limousine picked us up, picked up the Goldwichs, and Malka and I were crying. Pure Israeli souls being thrown into Washington Heights, which then had the highest rate of crime in all of New York City. What are we talking about? And now, so many years later, I said, Rav Meir Goldwich is more American than I am. Believe me, I believe he ate turkey and cranberry sauce and chestnuts this past Thursday. I wouldn't even know what this past Thursday was, except when I walked into shul, Simcha Mandelbaum was taking a survey. He grew up the Mandelbaum house. That was his home. He was taking a survey. Who's going to have turkey today? Oh, then it dawned upon me, turkey. And then they talk about Black Friday suddenly conquered Israel. God's so lucky. Gentlemen, Dr. Belkin tried hard, but if he couldn't get Rav Shach, he did bring in a number of survivors that totally colored the yeshiva in my time. And this was all Dr. Belkin. First of all, he brought in 2 younger people who had not yet made a tremendous reputation in Europe, but they were Ga'inim Sheba Ga'inim. Reb Noach Bornstein and Reb Yeruchim Gerelik. Reb Noach Bornstein, Amira, afterwards studied with Reb Velvel. Reb Noach Bornstein in the early 30s, I write about this in Rakafet Aram, in the early 30s, they offered a prize in Mir, whoever would learn in 1 year the 3 Bavot and I believe it was Yevamot and Kedushin, five different Mesechtot, and take an exam by the Rosh Yeshiva, would get $50. $50 early 30s in Poland is like my saying today, if you learn five Mesechtot and take an exam, you're going to get $5,000. Reb Noach Bunchstein won $50, early 30s. He went to learn by Reb Velvel. Reb Velvel called him the greatest Talmud he ever had, the best of cup. And he came. He was a survivor, went to Japan. Because already he was a well-known Talmud, they were able to get him out of Japan. And they brought him into the yeshiva, start teaching in those days. The Ritz was one structure from the age of 13 to the age of 23, 24 when you got smicha. Started teaching younger kids, started moving up the ladder. And in America, you know, he didn't conquer America. Caught up in a quagmire, married an American girl, a Rav's daughter. She was a college graduate. Struggled, support. I don't want to go into details. Money. It was sad. It was sad. His name you never heard of, believe me, until I mentioned it. But you're not the only ones. Rakefet used to say, take a look what America is, that Reb Noach Bernstein, the Brisker Rav, Reb Velvel's top Talmud, could go there and vanish. No one ever heard of him. What became of him? All right, he raised a nice family. Part of it is Haredi, part of it is YU. Some of you know Reb Shmuel Bernstein. His son taught many years in yeshivas, retired today, they retired him. Moshe Schwartz is related through marriage to the family, through his father, through his mother. Ask him, he'll give you the exact details. Aaron Rakefet said it. No, big deal. Aaron Rakefet says something, I wouldn't be overly impressed. You understand, Rafi? What the heck does Rakefet do? So I have a Talmud, who one of the Rabbanim of Shalavim, and he feeds me books that he thinks I should read. So he feeds me the Brisker Rav, the biographies, the Brisker Rav, the four volumes. I'm reading one of the volumes. And I take a look, a group of American rabbis came to Israel and went to visit the Brisker Rav. And the first words the Brisker Rav said to them, what kind of land do you have in the United States if my greatest Talmud Reb Noach Bernstein could go to America and has verschwunden dorten? Totally lost. No one heard of him. Yeah. Rakefet and the Brisker Rav, total agreement on this issue. Yeah. But he was a wonderful Rebbe, tied you together with Reb Velvel, with Brisk, his mind, his thinking. But you felt for the man because Yiddish was his language. He's caught up in a culture beyond him. He lived walking distance to Yankel Stadium. It was sad, sad to see these people, victims of Hitler, what they would have been in Europe. And, you know, they survived America. But they didn't survive in dignity. Underline the word dignity. Rabbi Yerucham Yerelik, everyone heard his name. He was a tremendous lamdan, not as big as Reb Noach. Reb Noach was the bigger lamdan between them. But he was a fine Talmud Chacham, a Radna, a Briska. But you all heard his name, Avilda. He was something special. Oh boy, he could explode, he could lance, he could cry, he could... What went on in his classrooms, his insight. I write about him in Washington. The stories are legendary. He went time after time. How did you travel in those days? No one had a car. What yeshiva kid had a car? One kid had a car, Danny Rosenthal. He drove the Rav to my wedding. Until today, I'm makir toivet to him that he brought Rebbe to my wedding. He had a car. He had a jalopy. He had a wealthy grandfather, so he had a jalopy. He lives in Yerushalayim. We daven together. Danny Rosenthal. In Chinuch all the years. So, Rabbi Yerucham Gerelik, you took the subway. No, inevitably, Saturday night, he went down the Mount Eden Square Center. It was the heart of Yiddishkeit. So many Jews lived there. This was the heart of the Bronx. And you go down to the subway and you see a kid going on a date, going to meet a girl, going here, going there. And he would get on come down to the subway, 174th Street, Grand Concourse, and he sees this kid with a girl. And it would happen every 2 years, the same story. And he would give them a look, a blick with the Aiken, give them a quick look. And the poor kid would come into class Sunday frightened out of his wits. And he would tell the boys, the Rebbe's going to slaughter me today. He saw me with a girl Saturday night on the subway station. I'm dead. I'm finished. And Rabbi Ruchman would give shir and look at the kids and look at him and not say a word. And the kid would go, Monday, he was a little bit less frightened. Rabbi Ruchman didn't say a word. Tuesday, by then he forgot. Thursday, with 5 minutes left in the week, Rabbi Ruchman, we're about to daven mincha, the final shir, and Avram would get them a cook. He gives them a look. Azam miyashkeit. Habe ich noch nicht in mein ganzes Leben gesehen. Such an ugly girl I never saw in my life. And the whole class knew what the Rebbe was talking about. The poor kid walked out a skeleton. But
the repeat of this story,
yeah,
is a disservice to this man.
Why?
Because this is not an example to us of how a Rebbe should be.
No, yeah, but
you're
say that. Yitzchak. Please, don't do a disservice. At least all the students, when we get together, anyone who had Rabbi Ruchman Gira, like, this is the story. But I have a better story. No, Rav Fishman, we'll talk about Rav Henoch in a minute. Rav Henoch was a princely individual. That's a different story. But this was Rabbi Yeruchim. You have to catch him. This is why no one heard of Rabbi Henoch Fishman, but everyone heard of Rabbi Yeruchim. The best story of Rabbi Yeruchim Yerelik is the one I tell in Washington, and it fits right into this lecture. Why? Because one time in class, 1 second, I just want to write down Rabbi Henoch Fishman. Okay, I should show the books. One time in class, Rabbi Yeruchim, we're talking about Rabbi Belkin's. Rabbi Belkin's name is mentioned, and Rabbi Yeruchim is in top form. Dr. Belkin! What's up, Gatanana? What did he do in America? It's Gaboy Taira? He built Torah? This ain't Gaboy? This is a yeshiva? This is a yeshiva? This is. And he's going crazy against Dr. Belkin. Oh, baby, wilt wissen, if you want to know who built Torah in America, oh, Rabbi Yitzchak Chutna, hat gebaut. Min daf sen, was is chayim Berlin, wie min ledend mit der Geschmackheit mit Yerushalayim. Yitzchak, you weren't there, I was there. And he's praising Rabbi Chutna and putting down Dr. Belkin. Fine. Few weeks go by. And the kid shoots a question, and he quotes from Pachad Yitzchak, from some shmuis that Rabbi Yitzchak Chutna gave. And Rabbi Yeruchim hears the name Chutna. Chutna! The man of Nishmami and don't mention it, he's going crazy. We daven mecha. We get together after class. The heart of the class lived in the Bronx, lived, you know, the great amount living there. So we said, well, boy, what the hell happened here? 3 weeks, 4 weeks ago, Huda was the Gadol Hadar, and yet it's Lichter and Dred, you know, he's finished. Okay, what happened? So we decided, look, you two fellas, Davin in Rav Gerelik's shul, he had a shul near Mount Eden, and Shabbos nach Mincha, when he's relaxed, go over and ask him, Rebbe, was he meant us? My high, what went on here? So they talk and asked him, and we got the story. He had his oldest boy, he's no longer alive, Rav Chaim Meiser. Rav Gerelik had 13 children. Don't minimize it. He wouldn't raise them in YU. Some of them would have been better off in YU, but some, were Haredi, fit right into that world. Some didn't. So, Chaim Moise was his eldest, named after Chaim Moise Grushinsky, and, you know, he was a good mind. He later becomes a Rosh Yeshiva upstate New York. And it's time to send him to high school. Reb Noach Bornstein sent his kids to TA. Reb Chenech Fishman sent his kids to TA. But for Rav Gerelick, no, not TA. So he started visiting the various high schools. He visited Teir Vidas. But Chaim Berlin, he was impressed with. Fine. So he decides, after visiting all the choices he has in the greater New York area, the kid is going to go to Chaim Berlin. Now he has to register the kid in Chaim Berlin. So he goes to see Rav Futner. And they register the kid, everything fine, good. And then he walks out of the office. Tell me, how do you walk out of this classroom? Right? You walk out. The Rebbe's sitting here, and you walk out towards the door. Look into the Rambam, Hilchot Tamei Torah, you'll understand. Outside the door is sitting Rav Hutner's gabbai. He takes Rav Gerelick, who was not a very tall, strong man. He had a black beard, but he was maybe 5'8", you know, nothing very impressive. This gabbai already is like a Gera Chassid, 6'2", 6'2 wide, lifts him up. Azay Gateman Arois from the Rosh Yeshiva? Chas v'chalila, this is the way you walked out? He forces him to go back in and walk out backwards. You don't turn your back on the Rosh Yeshiva. Oh boy, that's all Rav Gerelick needed. Pooh! That was Rav Yeruchim Gerelick. London par excellence. Could love you. I once convinced the kid who had gone to his elementary yeshiva. He built the yeshiva, Zichron Moshe, built the Beis Yaakov, Beit Miriam. He did good things in the Bronx. It doesn't exist anymore, but he did good things in the Bronx. He was a real, he didn't let America conquer him. He conquered or tried to conquer America. And I once convinced a kid who was studying in Zichron Moshe, I knew the kid a little bit from Bnei Akiva, and he was going to go to Bronx High School of Science. And I convinced the kid to go to TA. Och, Rav Yeruchim didn't know what to do for me. Then one time I invited him to Bnei Akiva. I was making a siyum on Masechet Megillah, I think it was. And we had girls, you know, behind the machitza. He was hysterical. What are girls doing here? It's Bnei Akiva. I said, Rebbe, it's Bnei Akiva. Well, why not? Character par excellence. And Nebuch, his son wrote, I quoted this in class years ago in a publication that comes out of Muncie, the son had the audacity, I mean, how people can lie. It's beyond words. Ein meshivim et ha'ari le'acham moto, I'm quoting from the Rishonim, but if the Ari is alive, he's going to contradict you. His son writes, my father never taught NYU, it's a big lie. Occasionally he went in, because he lived nearby, to give the boys Musa to leave YU. And this is what a kid can write when there are tens of thousands of students still alive, Baruch Hashem, who sat in Rabbi Yeruchim Gerelick's classes in the 40s, into the 50s, into the 60s, even into the early 70s. But this was Rabbi Yeruchim. Rabbi Henich Fishman was another individual. He already was a Shanghai survivor. Rav Gerelick and Rav Fishman were well known. Rav Gerelick and Rav Bornstein were well known students. They were older. So they didn't go to Shanghai. If I'm not mistaken, and I believe I'm not mistaken, from Kobe, Japan, they were able to get them either to Canada or to America. They got visas for them. But Rav Henich already went through the salvation and the hell of Shanghai. And I've spoken about him, I write about him, open up Washington. He was a princely individual, just a princely individual. He too was a mirror, I believe. He also spent some time in Brisk. And he was a Talmud of Rabbi Yeruchim Lubavitz, and Aza Edelkeit. I don't know how to say, I don't know how to speak English anymore, forgive me. Aza Edelkeit, habach mich nicht gesehen in mein ganzes Leben. Edelkeit, how a fine kite, fine, how would you translate? Finesse, decency. Ach, what an individual. He died young. He didn't make it out of his 50s. His wife just died a few months ago. She remarried another Shanghai survivor who was Mashgiach in Skokie, who also was widowed. And they lived many years in Arzei HaBira. She died well into her 90s, I would believe. And Reb Henoch had a son, Heshi, his oldest son. And Heshi, something special. Again, God takes the best. So one day I came home with Heshi. I said to Reb Henoch, "Hay tovach gemachta zun an Americana. Today I turned your son into an American." I took him to his first Yankee game. And Heshi went on to become a fine Talmud Chacham. He taught in TA, taught in the yeshiva, and then he decided he wanted to make money. He went into high tech, and he died young, but his mother told me he left must have had 10, 11 children, and there must be hundreds of descendants today of the Fishman family, Kanai and Hara. The most famous story of Reb Henoch, and I write about it, I've just repeated in context, was every Friday night we would walk over. We had no Yiddishkeit in the Bronx. There was no feeling of Yiddishkeit. So we sought out, we were anxious, we were hungry to just to catch on a brechel of ruchaniyot, a little piece of spirituality. So Friday night we would always walk to our Rebbeim's homes, Reb Henoch, when I learned by Rav Michal Katz, we used to walk 1475 Grand Concourse. I still remember the address. Reb Henoch lived even closer to me. I believe he lived on Davidson Avenue. It was about six blocks away, six little blocks. So we go Friday night and his Rebbetzin would serve chocolate cake. And we always noticed that Reb Henoch left over a little piece of the cake. Little piece. So, you know, an American kid doesn't tolerate nonsense. I had the chutzpah, but I said, "Rebbe, why don't you finish the cake? I see every week you leave over." And he broke into a benevolent smile, and he said to me, "Yichab Galerin by Rebbe Yeruchim Levavitz." I studied Musa with the famous Rebbe Yeruchim in Mir. And a person has to be the master over his desires. And Rabbi Yeruchim taught us, in order to teach ourselves how to be the master of our desires, if there's something we like very much, chocolate cake, a shot of good whiskey, etc., etc., always leave over a drop. Force yourself, and you'll become a master of your desires. I have to tell you, that story impacted upon me. I wish I had that ability to leave over a little piece of cake, but at least the idea behind it, I understood. So I once told the story, and a girl asked me, it must have been in Machon Gold, and a girl, many years ago, the girl said to me, "Rebbe, Bal Tashket." So I told her, "I'll tell you, Bal Tashket, if it doesn't serve a purpose, but leaving over a little kazayit, and it serves a purpose of educating you, alacha v'kama v'kama, it's very, very chashuv." It was unbelievable to have these Rebbeim, to be influenced by them. Some of us today, when we come together, I have a good friend I grew up with who lived a block away from me, Avraham Lamb, Ani Lamb. So we always talk about Reb Henoch Fishman, his personality, his elichkeit, overwhelming. I hope I should be a better person than what I am. Was exposed to such good people, but all right, I try my best. One area we're better than our Rebbeim, that you won't believe, but I can tell you, Reb Henoch and Reb Yeruchim and Reb Noach, they couldn't paskin. The brisk ruined the ability of the Litvisha yeshiva bachurim to paskin. That much I can tell you. I can still remember, I asked Reb Yeruchim once, "Rebbe, is a da machlekes sufficient the Mishnah Brewer and the Erech HaShulchan, V'Gaitman?" There's a machlekes, two great achronim, the Mishnah Brewer and the Erech HaShulchan. He says, "Chvesh Lishtalein, I don't know myself." And I have to tell you, some of us, I don't want to put myself into that class, but yet I have said Shurim and Shas and Paiskim and Shelet and Shuvit for many, many, many decades in so many different areas of Torah Hashem, Tamim and Dalet Chalkei Shulchan Aruch in this very classroom. So you take Reb Henoch Shechter, He's a posek mufak, right or wrong. You can agree or disagree, but he's a posek. He knows how to paskin. You take Morty Willig. Rabbi Willig is a posek. He's the Av Beit Din. He knows how to paskin. And you can go on and on of Talmidim, of that studied in YU. And that level, I think we turned out better than our Rebbeim. We Baruch Hashem, we have the ability to be poskim. We know how to poskim. And you'll ask me why, and I think it's because of the Rav. The Rav wandered into the rabbinate. He didn't plan to enter Boston. His goal in coming to America was to go to Chicago to be the Rosh Yeshiva. But he didn't succeed. Chicago nixed it. They didn't have money. They said, they sent that famous telegram to his father. We brought your son to America. We offered him a position. We got him an unquota visa immigrant status. But we have no money. Depression. Find the rabbinate for him. Had the Rav gone to Chicago, none of us would be able to paskin. The Rav would have remained the Rav, would have remained a brisker, would have remained an anical for Rav Chaim. Remember what I said yesterday? Rav Chaim could tell the Balabatim, go fly a kite. I'm not going to paskin. Hire an Av Beit Din, Rav Simcha Zelig Riga. He'll paskin, not me. You follow me, Avram? But the Rav wound up in Boston against his will. He didn't plan it that way. But they needed a position. He had a wife. He had a child already, Atara. And he wound up in Boston. No, when you are thrown into the rabbinate, willy-nilly, bal kochacha, lapcha v'chamatcha, you have to paskin. And the Rav became, I can't say became a Rav Moshe Feinstein, but if you read the Rav's letter to Rabbi Belkin about the draft, and if you're allowed to force reach graduates to enter the American army when later on there might be problems of Chilul Shabbos, there might be problems of Kashrut, the problems that a rabbi has when he's way off and who knows where he's stationed, and it's a world that's, you know, not like today's world where you can get certain kosher products all over the world. It's a different world today. And you read the Rav's tshuva, being matir and dealing with the Gemara in Shabbos, Daf Yutet, I believe it is, setting out to conquer a city 3 days before. What are you allowed to fight on Shabbos? And all that goes in, are you allowed to put yourself in sakonet nefashat? Are you allowed to go on a boat when you're going to have to help row the boat on Shabbos, etc., etc.? You see, the Rav willy-nilly became a posek. He had to give answers. And I think we who were his Talmidim and saw that he had to give answers, and we went into the rabbinate and we lived in America, and we, all right, I think on that level we're a little bit ahead of our Rebbeim, but it's chutzah for me to say that because a Talmud has to be humble and thank his Rebbeim, Shaliva Shalahem Shalahem Hu. But that was who Rabbi Belkin brought into the yeshiva. Now, he also brought in some other very great individuals. And for instance, he brought in Reb Mendel Zaks. Reb Mendel Zaks was his Rebbe in Ratten. That's what I believe, that's what I was told. Again, this has to be researched, but that's what was explained to me 60 years ago. More than 60 years ago. Reb Mendel Zaks was the Chafetz Chaim's son-in-law. How was Chafetz Chaim's son-in-law? Because the Chafetz Chaim married a second time. And with the second wife, I believe he had the daughter. He might have also had a son with the second wife. I think the son and daughter who came with him to America were from the second wife. His two older daughters who were married to Ralph Levinson, they were married, one was married to Ralph Levinson, they were married to Big Talmidei Chachamim, but I believe that they all died in Europe or perished in the Holocaust. You can check it out. A lot has been written on the Chafetz Chaim. But Reb Mendel was married to his daughter from his second wife. And Reb Mendel was a bucky in Shas, was a Litvisha, Rosh Yeshiva, and he struggled in America. If you recall, I told you, when he got to America and Rabbi Revel saved his life, got him a non-quota immigrant status, got him out, 41, I believe it was, came to America, and Reb Mendel was the first one to organize a Litvisha yeshiva in the United States. It was in White Plains, outside of New York City in a smaller community, a handful of students, but it didn't catch on. What White Plains later became, that was the nucleus that Rabbanan took to Lakewood in 43. Remember I spoke about this last year when all the Hatzalah work was finished, when there were no lives to save anymore. There were millions of people to save, but you couldn't save anyone. Every door was closed. So Rabbanan then shifted gears. And in addition to his Hatzalah work, he now had time to head up a yeshiva. And it was the nucleus from White Plains that went out to Lakewood, a handful of students, 10, 12, 13. A handful of students, I believe officially they say it was 13 or 14 or 12 or 13. A handful of students, and that's the way Lakewood began. In the meantime, Rev Zaks, he went to Toronto for a while, he taught there, he commuted, he organized something on the west side, but I believe it was 45, Rev Shmuel Belkin brought him into the yeshiva, and he became the Bochein. Now, of all the people in the yeshiva, Rev Mendel Zaks had the most difficulty in identifying with it. He became the Bochein, but he never was totally at home in the yeshiva, never totally at home with the Rav, never totally at home with the Americanization of the yeshiva, the culture. And the prime example, which I still see in front of me with my own eyes, I was standing out in the hall outside the Beis Medrash. I don't know what you call it today. In my time, it's called the Harry Fischel Beis Medrash. The New York Times just had an article. I thank Steve Gross for sending it to me. On when you give our dear student, Rafi Klein, becomes unbelievably wealthy. He buys out the Kellogg's factory. And before you know it, he gives yeshiva $100 million to name the yeshiva, to name the Kollel in Yerushalayim, the Shashi and Rafi Klein Hakatan Kollel. Now the question is, for how many years? Understand the New York Times. Did you see the article? And catch what does it mean? The Lincoln Center, I think, is a performing arts. They want to change the Avery Fischel Hall name. And now when you give heavy money to them or to the Metropolitan Museum, there's a contract that this money is for 49 years. At the end of 49 years, the museum or the center or what can renegotiate with you. And if you can't come up, they have a right to sell the name to someone else. So today, I don't know, I called it the Harry Fischel Beis Medrash. I don't know what it's called today. But it's an interesting question. I always say when people ask me, when you give $100 million for your name, it's for 49 years. Yovel, it goes back again. And I'm being half funny and half serious, you should know. And when I saw the article in the New York Times, I couldn't believe it. They had the same problem exactly. And look at the way they solve it. Reb Mendel Zaks, outside the Beis Medrash, we used to have what's called the Dean's Reception. Do you know about this or you don't know? It's been written up in the memoir that I'm sure my mama Yeshiva College, my Yeshiva College, I think it's called. The Dean's Reception were for juniors in college, and it was a big deal, like a big social. By that time, you were well integrated into the college. You had one more year to go. YU wants you to feel at home. You meet with the faculty. You meet with the dean. You have drinks. You have cake. It's a Viennese table, as we would call it today. And you bring your date to the dean's reception. Gentlemen, you bring your date, a junior in college, 20 years of age, is bringing a girl into the yeshiva to the dean's reception. The Rav was fighting with Rav Mendel Zaks. Rav Mendel was fighting with the Rav. Vikana yeshiva tana zazach v'etrecheta zazach. And the Rav would let him have it. And the Rav, where should they meet the girls? Better they should meet them under the auspices of the yeshiva than meet them on the street. And boy, what a machloket went on. Reb Mendel was never totally at home. When Reb Moshe Shatzkis died, 1958 I believe it was, and they asked Reb Mendel to become the third masmich of the yeshiva, to join his Talmud Reb Shmuel Belkin, and to join Morenu v'Rabenu the Rav, Reb Mendel declined. And my smicha has only two signatures. My Ritz smicha has only two signatures. The Rav and Dr. Belkin. You follow? The Rav Shatzkis was gone, 61. Reb Mendel declined. Never totally at home. His children, not one child, not one descendant, ever studied, at least as far as I know, could be beyond the children and the grandchildren, who knows, never studied under the auspices of Yeshiva University. So you see, Reb Mendel, he was a fascinating individual. You stood before him, and I was quite close to him. I went through Bechinit with him every year from 1951 till the time I went into the Smicha program. And then he was the Bochein of my students when I was already a Rebbe in the Yeshiva, a Ram in the Yeshiva. And I knew Reb Mendel in Yerushalayim as well when he later settled here. And I knew his son Reb Hillel Sachs, who's a Rosh Yeshiva, I believe in Ashdod, in one of the branches of Hebron. I believe it's in Ashdod, or is it some anyway, it's in a branch of Hebron. That's, I knew Reb Hillel very well. And there were other sons who later went to Muncie. Those of you from Muncie know that the, excuse me? They're in Kiryat Sefer today? Reb Hillel is in Kiryat Sefer today. Is that a branch of Hebron? Because I know originally it was part of Hebron. She was Knesset HaGadol. All right, Peseda. And the his brothers were in Muncie. I don't think they're all alive anymore. It was a very fascinating family, but never totally at home in Yeshiva University. Not like Reb Moshe Shatzkis, whose own son taught in yeshiva and his own grandchildren studied in yeshiva. In my time yet, I knew Reb Moshe Shatzkis' grandchildren who were talmidim in the yeshiva. Reb Noach Bunchstein, his children were in the yeshiva. Reb Hanich Fishman, his children were in the yeshiva. Not Reb Yeruchim and not Reb Mendel Sachs. Now, he also brought into the yeshiva two other great individuals who already had a reputation in Europe, were not unknown. They were a great asset to the yeshiva. We'll talk about them in more length when I finish with Rabbi Belkin, but for the sake of today's lecture, just let me mention their names. The mashgiach of the yeshiva, Mori Rebbe Lemusa, Rabbi Yaakov Moshe HaKohen Lessen, and he brought in the tzuvak of Rav, Reb David Lifshitz, who had tremendous influence in the yeshiva as a Rebbe and as just his whole personality was part and parcel of the yeshiva, of the varmkeit of the yeshiva, of the warmth of the yeshiva. These were two fabulous individuals. Okay. So this is Rabbi Belkin. This is the yeshiva. This is what he was accomplishing. This is what he was doing. But he never forgot the university, the college. And let's just say a few more words about his two greatest achievements. Stern College and Einstein. And here, let me introduce you to another volume that I don't believe I quoted this year, although I quoted it rather extensively last year. And let me introduce you to a wonderful personality who should live and be well. He's well into his 90s. I met him last a few years ago in an elevator in the Diskin, Rehov Diskin complex where so many Anglos live. He has a sister living there. That is Rabbi Dr. Gilbert Klapperman. Recognize the name for Vayakam Melech Hadash Daholeichu Dabar. And to Jason Allen, it's a name that he doesn't even recognize, but I'll try my best and then look in Wikipedia. Perhaps you'll find an entry. Gilbert Klapperman was a Talmud of Reb Moshe Soloveitchik. Gilbert Klapperman was a musmach out of the yeshiva, probably the late 30s, maybe early 40s, very early 40s. Gilbert Klapman went on to build a very important shul in Lawrence before Lawrence was Lawrence, before Lawrence was from Bet Shalom, I believe it's called. And it's where Rabbi Kenny Hain is today. Tell me, anyone can answer me, do they still have the same little mechitza, or has the mechitza grown in size to reflect the Lawrence population? Still the same small mechitza. It's amazing that you can get away with that. But I believe in the Jewish center, the mechitza hasn't changed either. So Rabbi Klapman did his doctorate on the early history of Yeshiva University. He did his doctorate before me. I stood on his shoulders when I did my doctorate on Rabbi Bernard Dreffel. Now, Rabbi Klapman's book was later published. It's called The Story of Yeshiva University, the first Jewish university in America. And basically, the book is about the 1800s into the early 1900s. But when the book was published, they added a chapter about what was happening in yeshiva at that time. And he describes Rabbi Belkin, and he describes him as a Rebbe. I'm quoting from page 178 on. In return, he was able to relate to his students with a warmth and compassion, concerned with each young man. He provided help to those who needed it, visited them when they were sick, fed them at his home, and worried about his needs. In addition, in return, his students revered him, confided in him, sought his advice and approbation. In addition to delivering his regular shiur, which was a marvel of logical exposition, incisive reasoning, and broad scholarship, and writing his many scholarly articles and books, Dr. Belkin, upon assuming the presidency, gave himself completely to blueprinting and expansion of the yeshiva, which even Dr. Revel could not have foreseen. And here you have a very interesting description. You'll hear later, not today, but next week, Be'ezrat Hashem, the Rav's description of Rabbi Belkin. And it dovetails exactly what Rabbi Klapman had to say. Rabbi Klapman obviously was a student of Rabbi Belkin. He just was a wonderful Rebbe, very incisive, clear shayurim. There's a very fascinating story that Rabbi Klapman told me, and that I'll repeat here. Just, you shouldn't forget the story, you should use it. Rabbi Klapman's father was, I believe, a shochet in the Midwest. And Rabbi Klapman came home for Pesach. And evidently they lived in an area where there was not a daily afternoon minyan. Those of you that have lived out of New York can relate to what I'm saying. Those of you who live, you know, in the heart of Brooklyn or Queens today, you don't lack for minyanim. You live in Yerushalayim, I often tell my grandsons that they're going to suffer in life when they get married and move away, because where they live, they plan their davening around their lives. When you move to a more normal community, you're going to have to plan your lives around the davening, around the minyanim. Okay, this is a factor of life. Halavai, all of Israel should have shtiblach like we have in Katamon and elsewhere in Yerushalayim, B'nai Brak, etc. So Rabbi Klapman's father said to him, Gedalia, you changed your daven mincha? In other words, his father's checking on him. If he daven mincha, his name was Gedalia in Hebrew. And Gil Klapman says to his father, Tata, I'm studying for smicha. I study with Gedolei Yisrael, with Rabbi Revel, with Rabbi Moshe Soloveitchik. And you're checking whether I daven mincha? And his father says, you're right, my son, but I'm a father. And a father has to check whether you daven mincha. It's a beautiful answer. But then he describes what Rabbi Belkin built. And here, 1948 is the fabulous year in which he established Central Yeshiva High School for Girls. Now you have to understand what an epic-making move this was. In Europe and in the early years in America, no one ever thought of sending their daughters to study in a yeshiva. Didn't exist. Yentl, Barbara Streisand, story is based upon reality. It didn't exist. Then the Chafetz Chaim, when he saw what was happening, the Likutei Halacha Tesaita, I've given many shurim, I can't go into detail now, but you all know the Chafetz Chaim says the famous quote, times have changed. And we have to teach our daughters Torah because they go to gymnasium and chas v'chalila, if they don't know Torah, they leave the fold. Times have changed. And I need not tell you how much times have changed. My mother-in-law, Zichrona Tzadeket Levracha, never, whoever heard, they're sending to yeshiva, what yeshiva, when, for girls? And she remained frum. And I once asked her, how did you remain frum? Born in America, raised in America. You know, we're talking a family that came to America. My wife has great-grandparents buried in Queens, in Mount Hebron Cemetery. And how did you remain frum? So she told me in 1898. She wasn't born yet. She was born a few years later. But Rabbi Dr. Bernard Drachman recognized the name, one of the famous Orthodox rabbis in America at that time, Rabbi Zichron Ephraim, which today is Park Avenue, what they call it, East, Park Avenue East, I think it's called. Correct me if I'm wrong. He published an English translation of, it's called Ben Uziel, the letters of Ben Uziel. It's the 19 letters of Rav Shun Shmuel Hirsch in English. And that book, which my mother-in-law read in high school, studied in high school on her own, had such an impact on her, she remained totally committed. And but who, when, where? And in 1948, Central is basically the first real yeshiva high school for girls. There already was a Beis Yaakov, but it did not have a formal general program recognized by the state with regions. And all that Central had, it was a real high school for girls. So this was a great achievement. Today you take it for granted. Every place where there's a yeshiva high school, there's something for girls. Sometimes it's mixed, sometimes it's separate. I'm in favor of separate education. Not always can you do it. But, you know, it's taken for granted in the state of Israel, the boys and girls, everyone has to get an education, a Torah education, what's the question? But in 48, this was epic making, and the fact that they picked Brooklyn, this dovetails with my share of yesterday when we're dealing with the problems in Brooklyn. Brooklyn was the heart of the YU neighborhood, the YU area. If you wanted one borough that supported YU, it was Brooklyn, all right. Then there was the Bronx, then Manhattan, but Brooklyn was filled. It always had a Jews with a higher level of observance. But then Dr. Belkin had tremendous vision and insight. Where do we go from here? You've opened up the ballpark for high school. But girls are starting to go to college. It's a different world. My mother-in-law went to normative school. That was teachers' training college. By and large, that was the goal of every Jewish girl growing up in New York. Either you went to become a teacher or you went to a business college after high school to become a secretary. But no one ever thought beyond that. But, you know, the greatest revolution on a certain level of the 20th century was feminism. And if you have a high school, what's the next logical step? You have to have a college. And here, Rabbi Belkin had a very unique relationship with Max Stern. And, you know, there you have to have someone you can talk with, someone you feel at home with, someone you feel at ease with. Someone that you can relate to, that he or she can relate to you. If you're in the rabbi, if you're in a pressure chamber, if you're a president of Yeshiva University, you have to have someone. The Rav talks about this, Asei Lecha Chaver. And when the Rambam's perish to Pirkei Avot, perish to Mishmayet, what it means, the Chava, Chava Ledeya. And the Rav spoke about this many times, that he always considered Rabbi Klavan his closest friend. Rabbi Israel Klavan, who was the executive vice president of RCA, was a Talmud of Rabbi Moshe Soloveitchik. A son of Rabbi Yoshua Klavan was a Yudapei Shadav, a big Talmud Chacham. The Rav always considered Rabbi Klavan someone that he could share his innermost thoughts with. Dr. Belkin and Max Stern are on the phone with each other numerous times every day. This was the Balabas that Dr. Belkin could talk Mamalushin with. They were on the same level, the same wavelength. So he started talking with Max Stern. And Max Stern had a brother, Gustav, and they were both very wealthy. They were both emigres to America from Germany, got out with time, with money, went into, what was it called, canary bird food, Hartz Mountains for animals, canaries, other animals. They did very well. And they were, you know, of Yeki origins, German origins. They did very well. So Dr. Belkin, they bought the idea. Gustav dropped out because it seemed the money at that time, he had some reverb, whatever. He couldn't handle the money side was too big for him at that time. But Max was able. And that's how Stern College begins, named after their mother. It's Stern College, began in 1954. Handful of girls. I don't think any other school that Rabbi Belkin offered succeeded as much as Stern College. And I have to admit here, I was one of those with many other students in the yeshiva demonstrating against the opening of Stern College. The Rebbeim, or at least some of the Rebbeim, were convinced that you open Stern College, there are going to be boys and girls running around the yeshiva. And that's one of the reasons that when Rabbi Belkin signed Max Stern the task of finding a building for Stern College, he told them, keep it far from the yeshiva proper. And Max Stern came up, used to be the Packard School, was a school building, mid-Manhattan, a fabulous location. And that's where Stern College began. And today, it's the most thriving part of the undergraduate divisions of Yeshiva University. According to all projections, Yeshiva College should have more students than it has today. But many things went wrong, made off money, tuition too high, every university today, any decent university. You have minyanim three times a day. You have shayurim. You have Shabbos. You have kashrut. Well, if you're not interested in learning Shas and Poskim, why pay $50,000 a year and go to Yeshiva University if I can get a similar education here, there, everywhere, and a better scholarship? And it's a real problem for Yeshiva College. Stern College has more students than anyone ever thought, anyone ever predicted. So it's very fascinating what has happened with Dr. Belkin's vision, Stern College. However, nothing compares to the guts that were required to open up a medical school. And here, I just, as I said to you, I spoke with a member of the Yeshiva's Board of Trustees, and he's very upset. He says, take a look how stupid YU is. He says, they're now negotiating with the... the Albert Einstein Medical School Yeshiva gave it up and Montefiore took it over and they're now negotiating with Montefiore on what the conditions will be and the monetary arrangements and faculty arrangements. And he says, who did Yeshiva send to negotiate? Rabbis. They should send businessmen. And you know, there is some truth to that. They always touch up the Gemara, Rabbi Hayam Mechabed Ashirim. This is what we want to raise our kids with, that Gedole Gaone Kedoshe Yisrael, respect wealthy people. This is what Torah is about? No, I'll tell you what the pshat is. Rabbanim no shasim paiskim. But if a businessman made $1 billion on his own, or he inherited and knew how to invest it and didn't lose it, you got a lot to learn from that person. And when it comes to practical matters, you should consult with him. Rabbi Yamachabed Ashirim, not bad. But when Stern College began, what a story. I just want to find one second. Rabbi, this is, one second, this is about 182C, give me one second here, and is it here, one second, I have a description of Einstein with something fabulous here, where, one second, this is serious that we spoke about, one second, I don't, is it in here? Graduate school, this is Stern College, graduate school, one second, I have too many notes here, okay, yeah, okay, so, he describes, but it's not that description I'm looking for, give me one other. It's not a talk to you about Pep. I want to ground it with a source. Okay, I'll talk to you about Pep. I see I don't have the source at my fingertips. I'll find it after class as usual. But it has to be here because I saw it this morning. But anyway. I know why I don't have the source here. Of course, it's not here. The source comes up, I believe, in the Rav's Hesped of Dr. Belkin. But let me say it here. When it comes to Albert Einstein Medical School, and I'll give you the source next week, Bezrat Hashem. When it comes to Albert Einstein Medical School, people laughed at Dr. Belkin. They didn't think he could pull it off. They said to him, and the Rav tells the story, that some very prominent professor in a medical school who was Jewish and was proud to be Jewish told Dr. Belkin, this is an absurd idea. It's arrogance on your part. How can a yeshiva, how can reeds, how can you open up a medical school? Where do you have the rights? A medical school, this requires a major university. It requires people who are totally integrated into the medical profession, into the medical world, into the science world. And here you are, Yeshiva University. And Dr. Belkin didn't let anything deter him. And he opened up Einstein, alapam v'chamatam. And what Einstein did for the yeshiva, what Einstein did for the Jewish people, what Einstein did for the prestige of the yeshiva, and more important than anything, Einstein was a fabulous success. 1955, the first class of students entered the newly constructed medical school known as Albert Einstein College of Medicine. It was the first time any Jewish institution in the United States had a medical school under its auspices. And then, a few years later, I believe it was 57, they take on a hospital, open a hospital. Jews, religious Jews, Shabbat, Kashrut, no classes on Shabbat. The school, the cafeteria, kosher, overwhelming. And this too, Dr. Belkin. So look at all this man accomplished. Enhancing the yeshiva, faculty, Stern College for Women, many graduate schools, the jewel in the crown, Albert Einstein. But something else happened. And we'll end off with an unbelievable true story. Unbelievable. There was a kid in the Bronx going to DeWitt Clinton High School. The source for all this is, I know the family taught many of his children, but there's a book called Judaism's Encounter with American Sports, by Jeffrey Gurak. Recognize the name? Professor of American Jewish History at Yeshiva University. There was a kid in the Bronx. His name, Marvin Hershkowitz. And this kid came from the typical Bronx home of my generation. Home was kosher. The shul they davened in was Orthodox. His father worked on Shabbos. Of course, everyone worked 6 days a week. And this Marvin Hershkowitz, who never went to yeshiva, had a pull towards Yiddishkeit, towards his shul. Went to high school, a high school that's in the news today, DeWitt Clinton High School. Can anyone tell me why it's in the news today? The Board of Education of New York City wants to close the high school down. There are not enough students in that neighborhood. It's in the Bronx, a part of the Bronx that already is not as dignified as it used to be. Very popular high school, DeWitt Clinton. Can't believe it's being closed. As a Bronx kid, it was a fixture, DeWitt Clinton and Bronx High School of Science. If I'm not mistaken, my mother may have gone to DeWitt Clinton. I think my father went to, what's the high school called in Washington Heights, George Washington High School? I think my father went there. So this kid, in addition to having this pull towards Yiddishkeit, was a fantastic basketball player. Maybe one of the best Jewish basketball players in the city of New York. Bronx-born Marvin Hershkowitz, an all-star selection from basketball powerhouse DeWitt Clinton High School, hailed from a marginally observant family. By his own estimation, quote, his family had a tendency towards Orthodox and attended an Orthodox synagogue, but his father worked on Shabbat to help make ends meet. While on Clinton, Hershkowitz played games on Saturday, but, quote, tried to do as least as wrong as possible. For example, he would arrange to bring his gym stuff to the game site before the Sabbath and to avoid carrying outside in violation of rabbinic precepts. Hershkowitz has recalled that he never did play well on those Saturday games, and as a kid, attributed his failures to guilt over his Sabbath violations. All right. He then went off to CCNY. A group of kids from DeWitt Clinton. By the way, almost all of them Jews. Some of them went on to become very famous basketball players. Some of them got involved in a terrible scandal a few years later of accepting bribes to shave points off the score. You know, with gambling, what goes on. I don't have to tell you, those of you who are baseball fans, in a few years, we celebrate 100 years since the Black Sox scandal. And believe me, what a scandal. It almost destroyed baseball. That's what made Babe Ruth so great, that he came on the scene in 1919, and people stopped talking about the scandal, and they started talking about the Babe and the home runs he was hitting. And because of that scandal, you probably are over in Nisa by sitting in the very chairs you are sitting. New Rabbi Rubin, I explained this to the class a few years ago. It's very simple. Who tried to create the scandal? Arnold Rothstein. Who was Arnold Rothstein? The son and grandson of two of the biggest donors, board of trustee members of Yeshivas Reb Yitzchak Elchanan, came from very pious stock. Shomrei Shabbos, after Kiddush, his father would go and sit and learn Parshat Shavua. Arnold would go into the father's office, open the desk, pull out a few $1,000, gamble it away, win. If he didn't win, he pointed a gun at your head, and come back after Havdalah, hear Havdalah, and put back the few thousand and kept the 20,000 he won in his pocket. Gentlemen, a lot of Rothstein money went to the yeshiva. For all you know, the chairs you're sitting on were bought by money that descended from contributions by Arnold Rothstein and family, the man who was accused of arranging the Black Sox scandal. What yichus we have in Ritz. Good and good. Anyway, Hershkowitz was not happy in CCNY. Libo chashka b'Torah. He heard about Yeshiva College. He heard about Red Saracek. Red Saracek was the legendary coach of the college team. And they met, and Saracek was not totally observant, but he was a warm Jewish individual, very proud to be part of yeshiva. I believe he had an uncle who was a rabbi. Saracek had an uncle who was a rabbi. And his tongue was hanging out for Marvin Hershkowitz. You know what that meant? A player of his caliber coming to Yeshiva College? But there was one problem. Marvin wanted to come to Yeshiva College, but he had never learned formally. He went to Talmud Torah. Maybe he could read Hebrew. Okay, what did you get out of Talmud Torah? You all know the story with Talmud Torah when the kid comes into Talmud Torah and the teacher is, you know, 3 days a week in the afternoon when you're dead tired, when you finished public school and you're learning and it's 5 o'clock in the afternoon and all the kids are playing on the street and you're learning and there you are and the Rebbe starts teaching the kid after he learns how to read, he starts to teach him how to say Kaddish. And the father comes to the Rebbe and says, "What's is mitach? What's learned in my son? What's the Yichmin Tate? What am I dead? You're teaching my son to say Kaddish?" And the Rebbe says, "Hot nish kum for ribble. Don't get upset. By the time your son learns how to say Kaddish, you'll be 120 years old. You have nothing to worry about." So he didn't have the background. So Red, it's an unbelievable story. Some of you benefited. You don't realize what this leads to. So Red Saracek went to Rabbi Belkin. And he told Rabbi Belkin, "We can get this kid. The kid today wants to be a Shomer Shabbos. But he doesn't have any background." Rabbi Belkin took him into Yeshiva College and assigned one of his Talmidim that he had a lot of confidence in, someone named Rabbi Abraham Baisden, Avraham Baisden, "Teach this kid and prepare him to enter the Teachers Institute," which was less demanding a program than what you call the yeshiva or what you call Ritz today. And gentlemen, nothing succeeded like Marvin Hershkowitz on the ball field as an observant Jew and as a budding Torah scholar, a kid who knew nothing, who is in the environment now that he loves and with a fabulous teacher, Rabbi Abraham, whatever you know him by, Baisden. No, do you start to see what's happening here? You succeeded with Hershkowitz. He integrated. Saracek's tongue is sticking out. They're Jewish kids all over playing basketball. Let's attract some of these kids to Yeshiva College. And there are other pressures on Rabbi Belkin. America is changing. Chabad, mid-50s. Chabad is starting to function. Chabad is starting to reach out. Who ever heard of these words before in America? I grew up in America. The 1880s, I never heard these words. The 1890s, I never heard these words. The 1900s, the 1910s, the 1920s, the 1930s, the 1940s, I never heard anyone say, "We have to reach out." Orthodoxy, what we spoke about, what was it, yesterday? A sickly weed. Who gave a huya yesterday? Who gave a hoot? Who cared? They're dying, they're gone. Who's interested? Remember the New York Times yesterday? Shown the article on the Erev in Williamsburg, what the Rav had to say about the New York Times. 1950. Outreach. Balei Tshuva. In a few weeks, we're going to talk about the Malachim. I wouldn't miss that class for anything. I'm going to show you something unbelievable. Wow, outreach. Chabad can do it. Why can't YU get involved? And Red Saracek, his tongue was out. Wow, it's like a guy gone out on a date. The one time, give me a Rabbi Ruchem Gerelich story. Rabbi Ruchem Gerelich came into the Beis Medrash with two pictures of two women. Young, beautiful women. And he went over to a certain Rosh Yeshiva, I don't want to give you the name, and he said, you'll understand why in a second, he says to this Rosh Yeshiva, everyone says your wife is beautiful. Nemakuk, afti tumunis, zagmir, tell me, which girl is more beautiful? This was for Chaim Meiser. Chaim Meiser already was seeking a shidduch. Two girls, everything the same, whatever, background, finances, everything. Who's the more beautiful? My word of honor, this is a true story. The Rosh Yeshiva, the Rebbe, this one is more beautiful. That's the one Reb Chaim Meiser married. You follow? So, Red Saracek, he's like a kid going in. He has a shidduch. Wow, beautiful pictures. Choose whoever you want. Shlish Gan Eden. You know what Israel's about. Shlish Gan Eden. Bring them in. 1956, finally and formally, a new program is organized. Jewish Studies Program, JSP. Unbelievable. Rabbi Beistin heads it up. Rabbi Beistin later becomes the one who discovers Rabbi Steve Riskin, has him start teaching there. Greatly responsible for Rabbi Riskin's mediocre rise to fame. Unbelievable individual. Once again, let me tell you, Edith Nemana. When Marvin Hershkovitz's wife died a few years ago, she remarried subsequently. Nebuch had said, you have a beautiful marriage, and the Ribbono Shel Olam always defeats us. Ultimately, man is defeated. If you're students of the Rav and read his philosophical writings, you know what I'm talking about. The lonely man of faith. If you've heard his Shayurim, the Mata for prayer, how can we approach the Ribbono Shel Olam? Mimamakim karaticha Hashem. No one here who has a perfect life, a perfect family, perfect health, perfect mind, perfect this. Raise your hand if you have it. I don't know. I don't see too many hands going up. That's all I can say. I'm not raising my hand. And I'm Baruch Hashem, more or less. Okay. Mimamakim. So, and when Marvin Hershkowitz was sitting shiva, Rabbi Ariel Lichtenstein came to Lenachim Avel. They're, approximately the same age. They knew each other well. And the discussion got on how Marvin Hershkowitz comes to yeshiva and how it paves the way in all this thinking and then Jewish Studies Program. And Ravan says, and yes, I was one of those who demonstrated against the Jewish Studies Program. There was tremendous opposition. The Rosh Yeshiva were frightened stiff. They're watering down the yeshiva. They're bringing Goyim into the yeshiva. They're bringing Mechalal Shabbos into the yeshiva. And Rabbi Lichtenstein said he was one of those who demonstrated. And I have to admit that I didn't demonstrate. But already by 55, when 56, when Jewish Studies, when JSP opened a formal program, by then already I had been to Chabad and I saw the miracles of outreach and what you could accomplish. So I was not one of those who demonstrated. But when it comes to Stern College, I plead guilty. I was one of those who demonstrated. And my wife, I guess, the Baruch Shalom evened it out. I never married a Stern College graduate. My wife is a Ramaz graduate and then a Hunter graduate. But she did go to Teachers Institute for Women, which later is absorbed and amalgamated into Stern College. So my dear students, today's sheer fascinating, fascinating. Who could believe that the whole JSP program began because of basketball, because of one Marvin Hershkowitz, should live and be well. Doesn't he live in Rehovot? He lives in Rehovot today? He live in Rehovot? For many years, he lived in Rehovot. And he lives in Rehovot, and his son Stewie, my student Shmuel, is the vice president of Machon Lev, very active in Machon Lev, gave up all his business with the banks, and he's now doing great things for the Jewish people. This real success story. Yes, Yitzchak.
If I may.
Yes.
There are two stories that I would like to quote from Rav Aaron Rakevich.
Do me a favor. Come where the mic can pick you up. Come up here. Come up here. Because people complain that you speak from the back of the room and they don't hear you.
I'm quoting to the Rebbe. From the Rebbe.
You're quoting from me. Okay.
First of all, the story you told, it rounds it out for this class about Stern College. That Rabbi Belkin came to Einstein.
Right.
And Einstein says, why are you coming to me? I have no connection with religion, and I don't see myself giving my name.
Right.
He said, ask them permission to return in 2 weeks.
Right.
He came back in 2 weeks with a student whose name was, I don't remember. But he said, do you know this gentleman? He said, of course I know him. I gave him his PhD.
He had studied in Princeton. Yeah,
so he said, okay, he says, but you know, before he came to Princeton, I gave him the opportunity to study physics at Yeshiva College. So then Rabbi Belkin had Einstein understand that it just wasn't the yeshiva, it was a university.
Right, right.
So then Dr. Einstein gave his permission for that.
Right, right.
Then there was another story you told over the years.
Right, and it's interesting. Who was that student? Was it Rosenfeld? That's really Rosenfeld?
No, I think it was somebody with a D. He's a famous man in the world of physics.
Physics, no. We've got to check. I remember the story. I don't remember the name.
Then the second story that is connected now with Stern College. Rabbi Belkin had just received a $500,000 check from Max Stern.
Right.
And then Max Stern, as he's walking out with a twinkle in his eye and a glee, he turns around and he says, Rabbi Belkin, probably called him by his first name, would you consider, I'll give you another $500,000 if you build a school where no one wears a kippah. And so he said, yes, I'll build a Stern College for women.
That story is anecdotal. It can't be proven, but they tell the same thing about the Panovich Rav, that some Chiloni from North Tel Aviv, a survivor who made a hell of a lot of money, said to him, I'm not religious and I have my complaints against the Ribbono Shel Olam, what I went through, but I'm willing to give you money if you build a school where they will not wear kippot. And the Panov just said, absolutely, I'll build a school that will not be required. And he built a Beis Yaakov for girls with the money that Jew gave him. But that's anecdotal. The first story, I believe, is true because I remember hearing it, Bishat Ma'aseh. And it's just, who did he bring? He brought a graduate of Yeshiva. I don't know. It may have been Azriel Rosenfeld. I think
it was somebody with a D.
A D? All right, we have to think about it. We have to look back. Anyway, to reiterate, what did we do today? Okay, today, I'm still enchanted with the story of Marvin Hershkowitz. You don't know what an elich, a fine individual Marvin is, and what wonderful children he and his wife raised. It's Kol HaKavod, that's all I can say. Are all the children living in Israel?
Yeah, one was in Chalavim.
All are living here. Oh, Kol HaKavod, Kol HaKavod. All right, say that, because for me, you know, people say to me, well, your children live here? I say they grew up here, but someone who came much later in life and the children live here, Kol HaKavod. Okay, so what did we do today? The yeshiva, the additions, the faculty, Stern College, Einstein, and the Jewish Studies program and how it began. Okay? Next week, Be'ezrat Hashem, I want to finish out Dr. Belkin. I want to do the Rebbe's Hesped for Dr. Belkin. Yitzchak, I already made a copy for you. I'll give it to you next week. And then I want to say a few words about my personal relationship with Rav Shmuel Belkin. And then I want to deal with some of the names I mentioned today, Rav David Lifshitz, the Mashgiach, in more depth. And then we're setting the stage for Lubavitch in the United States, which is so apropos considering the Shluchim Conference at this moment in time. First of all, who knows Shmuel Goldstein, the young man with the long payout? Please give him this. He asked me, and I, and here is what he wanted. Secondly, I just want to share with you, being a Talmud of the Rav, what I suffer. This is from an advertisement in Mishpacha magazine. And it's a new book that came out, Art Scroll. Living Emuna, Achieving a Life of Serenity Through Faith. Think about living a life of no stress, no anxiety, no fear. It's not an impossible dream, and you can achieve it. By Rabbi David Ashira, I think is the name. Ashir, Rabbi David Ashir. Who is he? Where does he teach? David Ashir. Gentlemen, I want to quote a Gemara to you. Where does he teach?
Ateret?
I give up. I need a scorecard. There's so many different yeshivas around. Give me a scorecard. Psachim Nundalid Amid Bet. Tana Rabbanan. Shiva devarim mechusim mibidei adam. Seven things are hidden from a human being. Eluhin, Yom Hamita, Yom Hanechama. What does Yom Hanechama mean? Rashi, shall call adam matai yitnachem midaagato. God doesn't want us to live a life without anxiety, fear, or stress. We're human beings. We're caught up in a web, in a quagmire. Human existence. Who are we? On an individual level, on a Jewish level, our people. Look at poor Rabbi Prusansky. Used the word savages. The whole world has jumped on him as if he was said that all Palestinians are savages. He needs an editor. Believe me, those who came into the shul with an axe to slaughter our people, they are savages as a compliment. They're a lot less than savages. But this is life. We have children to marry off, children to raise. What school to send them to? Avram, you have four children, you told me. Can I inherit? You don't have anxieties? What are you talking about? Come on. And this is the way God built the world. This is what makes us Yireim v'Shleimim. And we know we need Chasdei Hashem. There's an open Gemara against Art Scroll. And as Yitz will testify, when the book came out, what was it called? Peace of Mind? Remember? Joshua Liebman, right? He went crazy. He went ballistic. And if you read the Rav's writings, the tension, wow. Pass this on to Yitzchak. Let him enjoy it. Now, this I have to compliment Hamodia in the eulogies for Meir Tversky's. I saw some of the Haredi press over the weekend. Not one word about his mother's family. Only the Tversky's, Chernobyla, Talmud of Rebbe. Not one word. He's a grandson of the Rav. And tell me, who had the greater influence on him? The Talmud side or the Rav side? Where do his kids go? Panovich. Not one word. Here in Hamodia, the English Hamodia, an article on Kashrut in Toronto. I write about this in the Silva era, and the Rav's picture appears twice, and he is identified. Kol hakavod to Hamodia, that there's a modicum of intellectual honesty here. Anyone who wants it, it's yours. Anyone who wants beautiful interview with Rabbi Meir Plotkin, this is Chabad. Beautiful story here about Torah Vedasa on the verge of bankruptcy, and the Lubavitcher Rebbe, the previous Rebbe, the Friedrich Rebbe, sends a check to cover their bankruptcy problems, and he says, pay me back when you can. And at that time, Lubavitch was struggling, not Lubavitch of today. Beautiful story, eyewitness. Here again, if anyone wants, this is the New York Times, the Akedat Yitzchak story that burns me up about God on trial for trying to kill Isaac. Dershowitz defends God, and Spitzer, two tzaddikim, Spitzer is the prosecuting attorney against HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Hashem Yirachem. This is an amazing document. Joe DiMaggio writing a love letter to Marilyn Monroe, and look at DiMaggio's handwriting, signature for a kid who skipped out of school and I don't think finished the eighth grade. He writes better than most MTA graduates of 2015.
Who authorized the making this public? Because you once told us that he was a very modest man.
Very private individual. Right, and he refused. He was offered a fortune of money to write a memoir of his relationship. Well, let them write a memoir. You know, he would dictate a few things of his relationship with Marilyn Monroe, and he absolutely refused. No, there was a part of DiMaggio that's very admirable. Baruch Hashem, you're absolutely right. But when you're dead, you're dead. It's like people who leave wills with this and that, and if the business becomes Machalu Shabbos, it has to close down, be sold, and all the money goes to tzedakah. No, 50 years later, you go to court, the court says state and religion don't mix, go fly a kite. You understand? So what can you do when you're dead, you're dead. These are articles, finally, from the New York Times, a whole collection of articles on what happened in Har-Nof. And it's just beyond words how biased the New York Times is in refusing to understand the mentality of our people here. It's like, you know, we did this on Hanof, and then they did this, we do this, everything equal, totally balanced. And if you say to the New York Times, this is our land, open up the Bible, we're living in a world where the Bible has as much impact as ancient, classic Roman Greek literature. There are no believers anymore. Halavai, we should believe. B'lev v'nefesh. My dear students, until we meet again in health and happiness, when I see you next, my hairs will have turned more white because this important Chabad birthday will be behind me. Until we meet again in health and happiness, Das V'danya. By the way, Sunday Shir, we're going into England. Yitz, you hear me?
What?
We're going into England in Sunday Shir.
Good.
And we're dealing with a problem there that became major, but somehow never came up in America. Okay?
This is terrible.
Terrible. Okay.
I don't know the word to say.
Okay. So we agree. I don't know.
What is Rav Moshe's neshama up in Shammai?
All right, that's a different story. But you can't blame Rav Moshe for what happened.
What about this fellow's father?
And what about his mother and mother-in-law who were killed, who died? I don't know what to say. Very, very frightening.
Yeah.
But that's life.
There's two aliases rabbis have problems with, the Keshener and the Zipper.
I'm going to talk about it in Hollywood, Florida. I'll answer your exact question.
Hollywood, Florida?
Yeah.
My wife's from Hollywood, Florida.
I'll be there in January.
Okay.
Yeah. Where did your wife go to school?
She went to Weinbaum. And before that, she went to Rosemary, my mom's academy.
Aha, uh-huh. So she...
My mom's academy, that's the name?
Brazzer Maimonides Academy.
That's an area. Yashikayach, Yashikayach, Mark.
It's an area?
It's an area beyond. It's beyond Hollywood or beneath?
No, it's in Hollywood.
It's in Hollywood?
Yeah.
Oh, I see. So it and it's Tucker part of that county? Browser county, you said?
It's Broward County. The school is called Browser Maimonides Academy.
Why? Oh, Browser's the name of the donor.
Yeah.
It's the
Eagle Grand.
Very nice.
I went yesterday to
Rabbi
Usher Weiss.
Yeah, about in Charifesin.
Yeah.
Yeah, I want to go, but it's too late for me.
His English is not good. It's perfect.
Yeah.
He has a tremendous English vocabulary. I thought, he was going to give up. Perfect.
Yeah, I want to go, but I just can't that late. It bothers me.
I know. It's not 9 o'clock. I got home at 10:20.
Nishfer. Your younger people can manage it. Us older people can't do it.
I took a 2-hour soft in the afternoon. Yesterday, I went to hear Rav Asher Weiss.
Right.
I'm telling you, it probably next week it'll be written up. But it was on the Rambam. How come the Rambam has an opinion? He says that Yotze Dofen in the area, that if a goy is Shomer Mitzvahs, and I'm not talking about other Mechamero.
Right.
Tefillin, right. Shabbos, Kashrut.
Right.
Then he has a Scham and a Shamayim, and this is significant what he does to us. So then he talked about the seven reasons of Mechorot that perhaps the Rambam used to get to that opinion.
Okay, so you should know that there is no one around today like Rav Asher Weiss. He has a far-ranging knowledge in Psak, Shelet
Tshuvot. Right, he just put out two volumes.
Right,
of
right.
Shalos and Tshuvos.
Right, we have it downstairs. Oh. Yeah, we have it here. I bought it for the Kollel. And he's a mensch. He's a mensch. And he's not mavatil anybody. He has a certain openness that's beautiful.
You know, he told the story that I immediately thought of the Rav. He told the story that somebody on the side of a Baba Kama, I think it was, printed and wrote in about the Miri. And he said, Schottenstein erased it. Why? Because it was the Miri's opinion was that when it comes to business, you can't treat goyim less than Jews. So,
as long as they're not avodah zarah, Schottenstein erased it. What do you mean erased it?
He took away the comment on the side. So I was going to tell him, but I figured it was not my point. That the Rav also had a problem. He said because he said I can't get used to it. The new Gemaras. He says, I need an old Rumi Shas.
Right.
So I wouldn't let tell him about salvation. He had the same problem with the Rambam. He couldn't use a Frankel.
A Frankel.
But I didn't tell him that.
No, you could have told him.